Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Student of the Game. I am Kyle Nash, the Student of the Game, and here with me in studio, Chris and Weasel. We got the local hero. We got Weasel Weez.
Yeah, boy.
This is officially an episode. I love it when we have a full house up in here, especially these off-season things, because, like, I mean, I know a lot of times, you know, the discussion before the show is like, okay, how on earth are we going to get through 16 freaking games in an hour? Ah, because football. But now we're just kind of like, yeah, because football. And that's what we do here. Sort of thing we do here at NGSC Sports, where we never stop. By the way, a quick bit of a business there. You can go to the NGSC Sports YouTube channel, get the latest edition of the Sports Symposium, the second in the video series I've been doing here lately. We'll have another one there in about another month or so, because look, this takes time. I am a busy man. Demosthenes Euclid, my video guy, he is a busy man. And we are busy people trying to entertain you because we love to. And if you get us paid one day, that'd be fine. But that's a different topic. Let's get into the, you know, and this is random as heck. I mean, I know we're in the NFL offseason and we still find plenty of stuff to talk about again because football. I mean, it's really that simple when you come right down to it. But, yeah. I've been watching some NFL Network, right? And this is the time of year where you have a lot of history shows, you know, like, oh, this Super Bowl team did this, and blah, 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 and Johnny Unitas, and, or, you know, fill in the blank old player here. And discussion, you know, is talk about NFL dynasties. And for the sake of this conversation, gentlemen, I don't want to limit it to the NFL so much, but in sports, what exactly is a dynasty? I mean, that's not really written down anywhere, but in your mind, what's kind of a prerequisite for a dynasty? What do you need to actually get a dynasty to happen? I don't want this to just be my opinion on here to, you know, being a student of the game. I want this to be kind of a learning opportunity for us to get a bit of a consensus. And of course, if you have an opinion on what a dynasty is, hit it up on Twitter at the SOTG. I got my phone here handy, so I can definitely see what you throw down at me. But Weasel, dynasties, what do you think?
Well, I got to say that it would be a, well, for NFL at least, and it applies to other sports,
right,
that consistent success, and it has to include championship trophies.
Okay, so you got to win the big game. It can't be something where you got there one
year. You
got to
win the big game more than once.
Correct. You got there one year, you missed a year, you got it next year, you know, nothing really like that. So obviously, you know, the easy... The consensus NFL choices are the Steelers in the 70s, the Niners in the 80s, the Cowboys in the 90s, and of course, the Patriots in the new millennium. Weasel.
The Cowboys in the 90s can thank the Minnesota Vikings for that trade. Herschel Walker, pretty much for three players, three first-round picks, three second-round picks, a third-round pick, and a sixth-round pick, and they ended up getting guys like Emmitt Smith. I think Troy Aikman was in there. See, I think it was a...
Why are you so enthused by these no names? I don't understand.
Well, let's just say that they gave the Vikings gave the Cowboys a kickstart in building a dynasty.
Yeah, Kickstarter. Because
that's in a span of about, what was it, five years or so, three Super Bowl trophies. So,
well, no, I mean, they were back to back to back. I mean, the Bills went to the Bills. Here's some pop quiz, and I know Chris will know this. The Bills went to the Super Bowl four times and lost. How many teams did they lose to?
Could be two.
It is exactly two.
Huh.
But, yeah, one of them, of course, was Scott Norwood and the kick missed round the world.
Yeah.
And you know, it's funny. He's over it, but Buffalo isn't. But I digress there. And, of course, the Cowboys beat the Bills the next three times, which is interesting in itself. But, okay, so Weasel says you got to bring home the trophy a lot and do it consistently. Chris?
I just say just dominant overall.
So you don't have to have a championship.
I don't think you have to win the trophy. Maybe one in there throughout it, but, I mean, if they're consistently winning, I don't think.
What time span are you talking about, though?
So over years. I mean, you look at 5, 6 years, 7 years. If as long as they're winning, then I think it could be. You know,
what can you come up with a, kind of an example of what you're going for there?
Well, I mean,
I'm trying to think of the spot. You know.
Right. No, I'm just, I mean, you said, like, Patriots with Dynasty. But right. I mean, if you say early 2000s, then they had a span they didn't win until just this past year.
Right. So,
I mean, if you look at throughout the all time, but they were always one of the top teams. So you can say from 2002 till now that, yeah, the Patriots could be a dynasty for that whole time, even though they did not win anything since 2005 till 2015, those 10 years.
Yeah, I kind of see what you're getting at. The fact that they have, what is it, 12 straight AFC East championships.
Yeah, that's not saying much.
I mean, well, yeah, and that's kind of my point. I mean, you know, and first of all, this is what it is to be lucky as a sports fan to do these kind of comparisons, right? Like, the bestest of the bestest of the bestest ever, right? You know, but I don't know that I would go so far to say that, let's say, the Packers of the late 90s or the Broncos of the late... Actually, yeah.
Yeah, I think the Broncos should have been in the late 90s.
The Elway Broncos, the late Elway, I should say, the late Elway Broncos are a dynasty. That's right. I don't... Well, here's my take. And I'm afraid I'm closer to Weasel, and I'm definitely far, far more harsh than you, Chris. And I could be ahead of Weasel on this. You win one Super Bowl, or do you win one championship, you are not a dynasty. You win two championships, you are not a dynasty. So, to put it in perspective, Pete Carroll making that horrible call on what ended up being the last play of the latest Super Bowl.
That's a shame.
Yeah. Ruined the chances for the Seahawks to play for a dynasty this year. See what I'm saying? I feel like you have to have at least three championships. And there's a difference between being a perennial postseason appearance versus being a dynasty. I mean, you know, the word dynasty derives from a Chinese empire, and you ruled. You were the top dog for an extended period of time. This isn't just, you know, somebody who, I mean, also ran a lot. And, oh, by the way, I got a championship in there somewhere. You know, otherwise the Colts would have, you know, a dynasty written all over them in the Peyton Manning era. But there's some other things, too. Like, so let me ask you this, because, and we'll bring up the Cowboys specifically here. Their dynasty, they beat the same team three times in the Super Bowl. Does that cheapen it any?
Supposedly, you know, it's the best in the AFC, so... I mean, if they got it, and they kind of got their number, but I'd say it's still a dynasty. I mean, they had to beat teams like the 49ers and everything to get there. So I think it's three times, and talent everywhere, I give it to them.
And the talent everywhere thing's important, too. I'll agree with that, which is, I mean, that's the reason why I wouldn't put personally, let's say, the Rams in the dynasty discussion. Now, granted, the first Patriots Super Bowl where Brady came in, you know, as a rookie and all that other stuff, and they won that particular Super Bowl win for the Patriots prevented the Rams from playing for being a dynasty. I mean, they had a lot of good defensive players, too. Anybody remember? I think they had Aeneas Williams, for example, at corner at one spot. Now a Hall of Fame. I don't think he's in the Hall of Fame yet. I'd have to check that out. But he's at least been a candidate of late. A lot of talk behind that. But being said, let me ask this question. Do things like, let's say, the Tuck Rule, for example, take away from the Patriots dynasty? Or is it just, it just is. They got the trophy.
Sometimes you have the teams that they win, like, by, you know, fluke stuff like that. But the thing is that you just got to win. And I've noticed, like, a lot of times when I think it's the Cubs, they had that one, the one fan that grabbed the ball away from, I think it was in the NL championship or something. You have the fan
Bartman
that,
or whatever,
yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
He caught a foul ball when a Cubs player was trying to catch it. It would have brought an out. What I think people don't, you know, think about is that I think the Cubs were up by one or two point runs, and everything.
Save Hurley.
You got the defense. They gave up some more runs. They couldn't get anything done on offense after that. And there's other examples in sports. And one of them, good old Gary Anderson in 1999. The guy made every single field goal in the season. And so it comes...
And the season previous, by the way.
So it comes against the... In the Super Bowl, it was in the NFC Championship game. You have the Falcons versus the Vikings. He missed a field goal in about the fourth quarter, and it's like devastating. It's like the guy was perfect. Now he's not. But the thing that people don't remember is that the Vikings at the time were up by 7 points. They took it to overtime, and so they had all those chances to still win.
Well, and Dennis Green took a knee with 8 seconds left in that game, too. Yeah,
that's whenever you have guys like Jake Reed, Randy Moss, and Chris Carter, and then you take a knee, it's like, it's sad stuff, but, yeah.
Robert Smith, too, right?
Robert Smith, back,
And Robert,
who was Cunningham, so.
Very good, Cunningham at quarterback.
So that, there's excuses and stuff like, but the thing is you just got to finish it out even when things go wrong.
There's excuses and twists of fate and things like that. Well, and I think that's what makes being in Dynasty so impressive, is even if you do have something like, I bring up the Tuck rule, or I bring up the Cowboys having 3 years in a row. You know, it still makes the dynasty an amazing thing, because you still had to do plenty to make to get even that close to it to you know, need it. I guess I don't know.
There's one Super Bowl. I'd say it's pretty safe to say it's a dynasty. The Steelers in the 70s.
Oh, no, that definitely is.
I'll just say. They won in 1974, next year in 1975. They took a couple years off in 1976 and 1977, and decided to win once in back-to-back years in 1978 and 1979. You got players like Jack Lambert, you got Bradshaw, you got Franco Harris, you got Lynn Swann, you got wide receiver Stallworth, and you have...
I'm glad you said Swann first this time.
Webster. The center for him for a good while.
Yeah.
That's definitely, like, you can call that a dynasty, because 4 Super Bowls in a span of, what is it, about 5 or 6 years? Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like, and let me make this amendment, because I know I said 3, you know, in a row is when you start talking. If there is a period in history where you have more wins than... More championships. I got to be careful how I put this. More wins than more championships, rather, than times you didn't win the championship. And you have more than 2 championships at the same time, you're a dynasty. For example, like you mentioned, the Steelers there, they have a 5-year span where they won 4.
It was
okay.
4 out of 6, I think, yeah.
Right, 4 out of 6, for example. I think the Pats were 3 out of 5 or something like that at one point.
Yeah.
I don't know.
They had that big drought, and Patriots are awesome in Super Bowls, except when they play the Giants.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, not for nothing, I'm still looking for a Christmas card from Belichick to Pete Carroll. I'm just saying. I'm just saying. There you go. Anyways, anything to wrap up with that, Chris? Or you think we pretty much got
it? Yeah, I think we pretty much got it all taken care of in that one. All
right. I mean, yeah, there you go. Of course, in mentioning dynasties and this being a football show, we have to say the Packers somewhere in there, because they were winning championships long before there were Super Bowls, and because Lombardi. Boom.
Yeah, those were back, what is it, 50s, 60s? Or
60s, correct.
Yeah. So, most definitely, they dominated for a great while.
Domination. By the way, somebody get Jerry Kramer in the dang Hall of Fame. Like, he's a guard. The power sweep was their signature play. You need the guard to pull for that to be successful. Can somebody tell me why this hasn't happened yet? Because dumb. At any rate. You know, something else I want to get to here that's a little bit more current, now that we had our little fun discussion about dynasties and whatnot. So, we're aware by now on this show that Cam Newton signed his new contract. Worth over $100 million, $60 million guaranteed, and of course, 5 years. This is a radio show, not video, but show of hands, Carolina had to pay Cam here, right? Nobody thinks that they should have passed on him, right?
No, they had to pay him.
Okay, Weasel?
Yeah, but maybe not that much, but they had to pay him. They had to keep him. Because you don't, I think the way it works with quarterbacks like that, you're going to pay them big money, but if you go through drafts the next years trying to find that franchise quarterback, it could put you years back. So I think, yeah, I don't think they need to pay him that much, but they did.
Well, so it's interesting they don't have to pay him that much. What, I mean, is it too much guaranteed money? What?
I think it was his, what, 50, 60 mil?
60 million guaranteed.
That's a lot.
Well, that's 12 million a year. Yeah. His contract is worth 19 mil a year in salary, I think. I can check that. But that, oh, look, I happen to have it right here in front of me. How smart. See, it's called research. Actually, yeah, no, it's closer. Okay, so he's getting 20 million a year, which, to be honest, is the going rate for guys that are quote-unquote franchise quarterback. Cam Newton, franchise quarterback, yes or no?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so there's not even a debate there. Cam Newton, the main reason why, although they did it with a losing record, the Panthers made the playoffs last year. Yes or no?
It's a big reason.
Yeah, it wasn't Ron Rivera.
But I say, you're both wrong. The main reason why is the NFC South sucked. Right. But being said, you're right. It wasn't Ron Rivera either. Which somebody tell me. No, I already know the answer. I'll stop myself. The reason why Ron Rivera still has a job is because he made
Cam Newton.
Well, damn it, you with your reality. No, it's not what I mean. I mean, it's based on making the playoffs. True, they got eliminated immediately by the 49ers the year it happened when they went on to the Super Bowl, I believe. But if they had missed the playoffs that year, Rivera would have been gone. So, because they got to the playoffs that year, and were a far better team. I mean, I believe they still even had Steve Smith, though he was hurt a lot. The cost was that they get to keep Ron Rivera as a coach. And we all know how I feel about that. I've been going on and on about it for years. So let's not touch that here. However, Weasel says it's too... Let me ask you, Chris. Too much of a contract for Cam?
No, I don't think it is. I think they wanted to solidify that quarterback spot there. So I think they got him at what the going rate for quarterbacks is going for. So they wanted to make sure he didn't leave, go anywhere else.
And as much as it ticks people off that when people bring it up, some of the off-the-field stuff with him is part of the reason why you throw that money at it. I mean, other than Russell Wilson, who's a guy that didn't win a Super Bowl in the past year? I know he won the year before, but that is getting commercials like Cam Newton. And Peyton Manning doesn't count either, by the way. Although Ramos, I think I see Cam on TV more with that yogurt commercial than Peyton. Go ahead.
Necessarily, like, I would say someone like Romo. He gets a lot of attention, but...
But no commercials? No positive attention?
No.
When's the last time you've seen Romo in a commercial? When's the last time you've seen Romo involving something that either talks about him being a quarterback or asking if he's a good quarterback or not?
Is it a bad thing?
Is it a bad thing?
Yeah, not getting like advertisement like that, or
I don't know that it's a bad thing that he's not, you know, a poster boy or that he's not peddling stuff for companies. Not necessarily, no. But I go to the corporate sponsor place because a franchise can do something with that, right? If the Cowboys were going to try to make Tony Romo their poster boy, that would be curious, because a lot of Cowboy fans have a lot of mixed emotions about Romo and his performance. Deservedly or not, because we've been on this show before and declared, leave Tony alone! Well, not Chris, because, you know, Giants fan. But I don't think it's quite the same as Cam. I mean, I don't know. Chris, help me out here.
What was it again? I'm sorry. It sounds like...
Are you watching too much porn again?
Yep, too much.
Put the parental? I'm gonna have to put the parental controls on. Goodness gracious, Weasel, do something about this gay. Anyways,
you're talking about other players. I know you're saying about the commercials and everything. The only one else besides Cam Newton I see is Russell Wilson,
which was the lead. Other than Russell Wilson, you know, maybe Peyton Manning, and I'm not counting Tom Brady because he just won the Super Bowl. And even then,
you don't see that much.
You see Cam more, exactly. I think part of it is that he's a likable figure, for lack of a better explanation. Despite the fact that in his rookie year, he was considered controversial because he had tattoos. What a crock. Anyways, Everyone forgot. No one brought up the fact that he was stealing laptops at Florida, allegedly. But the tattoo thing, that's where we draw the line. At any rate, whether that's true or not, he's obviously come a long way since then. I'm not trying to dwell on that. But what I am trying to say is, at this point, as marketable figures go in the NFL, who is, other than Russell Wilson, ahead of Cam Newton? I can't think of anybody. Right? So, let me ask you this. If Cam Newton goes somewhere else, which I think everybody agrees, say yes if you do, if Cam Newton didn't get signed, he would have gone somewhere else pretty easy. Yes?
Yep.
Yes, great. There's a lot of teams that still need a quarterback.
Bingo. And the jersey sales for the arrival of Cam Newton would be also commensurate with said hype, correct?
Yes.
Yep.
So don't act like that's not a value here to this team. That's part of the reason why that money is what it is. Now, Weasel, to your point, will that help the salary cap? No, you're right.
It's something that, you know, with that I want to understand more with salary craps is that salary craps.
You're talking bleep.
Is that Tony Romo did have his contract was pretty huge.
$55 million guaranteed.
$55 million guaranteed.
At one point before he
restructured. This past season, in order to, they were thinking maybe get some room for one Adrian Peterson.
Mm-hmm.
What the Cowboys did was they restructured his contract such that he'll get the same amount of money, but I think they divided it up into a bunch of signing bonuses, something like that, along those lines. And what that does is, I think the big thing is this cap hit, is that if you're taking a cap hit of $20 million or so, how much is the whole cap? I think it was what, $130 million now, or
it's a little
it does
bit
go up and
that.
Stuff. Yeah,
right. 152, I think.
Yeah.
So I knew it was higher than 130. It's gone up a few times since 2010 in the lockout. It's gone up at least twice.
So if you think about it, like structuring a contract a lot better with stuff like signing bonuses for each year or anything like that, because with that $20 million, if you can bring it down to like $10 million, which I think it was the one in Romo, his one saved about $13 million.
In one year's worth of cap, right.
And if you think of $13 million there, you're talking about at least two players that are, I would say, upper-tier players.
Pro Bowl-level players?
Most likely, yeah, $5-6 million. You could sign extra players like that, even if you have to sign like one of your main guys, like in the future. I think next year they have to pay Dez Bryant. I just think that the structuring of the contracts, if they can work on that, I think it can help out teams a lot, and they can sign more players instead of having everything pulled into the quarterback's position.
Yeah, and I mean, that's definitely the argument for example, Andy Dalton's contract or Kaepernick's contract, the way it's structured. I mean, people talk about Kaepernick's contract being bad. Oh, it has $61 million guaranteed. Yeah, but there's all these things where some of it's guaranteed and some of it isn't really. And then, moreover, Cam's is $60 million over 5 years, whereas Cap's is $61 million over six. So that matters.
I think that with Kaepernick's contract, it was made a little bit so that I think it's like, hey, we're really, really confident about you. The 49ers
but
saying
not
to,
so much.
But hey, guess what? Maybe after your year two or starting year two or year three, we can cut you.
Right, and that's
and
it.
Not have to pay all this huge guaranteed money. Now, the difference was between Kaepernick and I think Jay Cutler should have got a contract similar to Cutler. Cutler should have gotten one similar to Kaepernick, because Cutler's his contract was plus $100 million. He was guaranteed, I want the $50 million or so range and stuff like that. But the thing is for the next 5 years, you're stuck with that.
Right. Well, and let me add this caveat, too. What you said there is correct. It would be nice if Cutler's contract was different. But I think it was Cutler's contract that inspired what happened to Kaepernick and Dalton's contract. Until they saw, oh, my God, those dudes got screwed. Nobody was looking as hard for a creative option at that point. Right. Perhaps a forward-thinking man would see a Matt Ryan and have come up with that. Because, it's not that, and to be clear, Matt Ryan isn't a bad quarterback. He's just a quarterback that's right in that danger zone of too good to get rid of, not good enough to take you where you need to go. I mean, heck, with the mess of injuries that the Falcons had this year, I'm definitely not going to blame it on Matt Ryan. That's not even really fair.
Free pass.
Yeah, for all intents and purposes, sure. I mean, I don't even agree with them firing Mike Smith after that year, but I digress. So Cam's contract looking like what it looks like. A lot of guaranteed money, but he's 26. In six more years, that's when they'll, be able to get him at a discount if he's still good, maybe, possibly. I don't know.
Asking to restructure.
Could be.
You'll tell a lot about a quarterback if he's willing to restructure his contract or not.
Well, or something else it tells about a quarterback is what he'll do when it comes time for him to give him the payday that he deserves. But it's at the risk of a lot of high-value targets that are in the way as well. When I say high-value targets, I mean, for example, Richard Sherman, Earl Thomas, and, of course, Marshawn Lynch, who's getting paid $12 million as a running back in, beyond the 30 mark just for this upcoming year.
He did a lot in the past 2 years.
Just saying.
Except, do a game-winning touchdown on the second down in the Super Bowl.
I see what you did there, Pete Carroll. I mean, Weasel. But, but of course I'm referring to Russell Wilson's contract. See, there's a reason why we're comparing these two. Here's the thing. Would Russell Wilson get as much dap as Cam Newton if he were on the free market? Chris, anybody?
Yeah. You're saying he's in the free market, as in he's available for any team to
correct
pick up? Yeah. No compensation towards the Seahawks?
No. Okay. Yeah, if he left, I'd say, yeah, he would. There's still teams out there that the quarterback, he's showed that he could win with the team, even though really it's the defense and Marshawn Lynch. Okay. But
so you're adding all these caveats. But you didn't hesitate when I asked that same question of Cam. Notice that?
Well, stats can tell some things, not the whole picture. But when you look at Russell Wilson, the guy's been pretty consistent. Now you got 63%, 64% all 3 years that he's been in the league, averaging 7.7, 8.2, 7.9, which is considerably high. Then you have his touchdown to interception ratio. His rookie year, 26-10. You got 26-9 in 2013, 20-7, and his quarterback rating, I know people don't like it, doesn't say everything, 95 in 2014, 13 was 101.2, 100 in 2012, and last, he had 849 yards rushing on the ground during the regular season with 6 touchdowns. So if you want to tack that on to his touchdowns that he's responsible, that he put forward, 26 touchdowns to 7 INTs, so it's not bad at all.
You know what? One of the things that's so great about this show, Chris,
just to make sure that
go ahead.
Don't his weapons: Marshawn Lynch, one of the best in the NFL, top 5 running back.
You've said the best before.
Yeah, he's always
most
balanced, still
at least.
Yeah,
right? Yeah,
exactly. But his tight end, his wide receivers.
But he's had the best defense in the league too, which helps him win the game.
That does.
So unlike with the Panthers the last few years, the Panthers defense has helped a little bit. But Cam Newton didn't have that dynamic running back. You can't say Jonathan Stewart and D'Angelo Williams.
They were injured.
Well, yeah. When they were on the field, even, they weren't dynamic running back either. They were out, too, the last year, most of the year.
Right, but I'm saying you can't say that for Cam Newton. He did a lot more on his own, especially with he had Steve Smith. Steve Smith left. That was only his weapon he had there, pretty much.
Well,
and then you have Greg Olsen. You had Greg Olsen as well.
And then this year
you had Greg Olsen and... And Kelvin Benjamin.
Right.
But those are two offensive weapons with Cam Newton. Even when Cam Newton was out, when they had Derek Anderson come in at quarterback, it was just Greg Olsen and Kelvin Benjamin. That was the only two weapons they had.
Right.
For it. So, that's why you hesitate. That's why I hesitate with Russell Wilson, because, I look back at his college days, even when he started at NC State. Everyone's like, oh, how impressed he was. I didn't think he was that impressive in NC State. Then he went to Wisconsin. Yeah, he won because he had Monty Ball as his running back in the backfield. He had that offensive line in front of him. That's why he ran. There was a reason why he was a fourth round pick.
And not there, for nothing, no. Offensive linemen in Seattle, up to this point, since they got rid of their center this past year, pretty solid bunch.
Correct.
So was it Unger, Max Unger, right?
Yes, they got rid of Max Unger. He went to New Orleans. But
epic,
I mean,
O lineman beard, Max Unger.
But you got to look at them, and then Carolina Panthers don't have that offensive line either.
Ryan Khalil's a good center, but beyond him, I don't know of anybody.
Right.
So yeah, I see. Here's the thing, and this is pretty much where I put it on Wilson. You mentioned consistency, Weasel. Here's some consistency I'll add to the tape. When you look at the games that the Seahawks lose, there's a consistency. I have never seen a game where Marshawn Lynch is prolific and the Seahawks lose. Now, don't get me wrong, and I mentioned this in the symposium video. I don't think Russell Wilson is overrated because he's a game manager. I think he's overrated because people let the numbers lie to them. They forget about the fact that Richard Sherman's lack of stats is actually proof that, you know, he doesn't get thrown at as much, regardless of if you think he's the best corner or not. And then on top of that, you have Marshawn Lynch, who you can measure his output. And moreover, Ryan Terrain, I think is his name, or Turbin, or I always get his name wrong. But the backup running back, when he gets the ball, that ain't all that great. And look at the film. Weasel mentions 800 and something rushing yards. But the dude is a runner, of course. However, how many of those are based on them keying Marshawn Lynch? And something else I need to look up. If I know the debate was gone this way, I've already done that. How many of Russell Wilson's passing yards are to Marshawn Lynch? I know they were a huge reason why they made it to the Super Bowl last year in the postseason. Not for nothing. Anyways, we can go on about this a little bit later, and I think we will, but for now, let's go ahead and hit the break. You're listening to NGSC Sports. This is the Student of the Game. You know, hey, look, I know we're talking a lot about Super Bowl winners and things like that, but, you know, there is some other stuff going on in the world of sport in general. And let me ask you this, because there's been news lately this week, and I'm not saying that I think this is a good thing that this is happening or anything like that, but there's been some news made of late this week. Some expose about how college athletes get away with more crimes and things like that because they're college athletes. Show of hands, and by show of hands I mean yes. Is anybody shocked by this?
No.
Didn't think so. This is news? Really?
Sorry, no. It's okay. Not news because, I mean, there's a lot of times, I think sometimes grades, and there are, when the players get in trouble, yeah, the court system would look at them, you know, lightly and say,
well, it doesn't even get to the court system sometimes. Because I'm not saying you're wrong, Weasel. It doesn't even get to the court system a lot of times because the court system maybe harsh.
I'll say like arrests and.
I would say local law enforcement.
That's it.
Yeah, you got it, Weasel. You know where I'm. You picking up what I'm putting down?
I got you.
Weasel Weird.
Yeah, boy.
I don't know what it is about the impromptu Weasel Weeze call. That's a good time. I don't care. Maybe you guys don't like it, but we have fun with it on this show. No offense, guys. Just saying. Anyways, so to kind of wrap it up, I mean, let's put it this way. Here's a question I want to ask, because before the break, we were breaking down Russell Wilson and Cam Newton. First of all, pop quiz. Chris, you have to get a new quarterback. The top two quarterbacks available are Russell Wilson and Cam Newton. Which one do you take?
I take Cam Newton.
Weasel.
Get ready for the hate. I'll take Russell Wilson.
Okay, and if you want somebody who needs help to win, you see, this. It's not that I'm hating. It's just Weasel's confident in his drafting skills. Me, I'm not so sure I would have a good draft, so I need a quarterback who could do it more on his own. I got Cam Newton. Yeah. Really? You picked Wilson on that?
Yeah, I did. Consistency is my reason.
You can't handle the truth.
Anyway.
Well, let's go through Cam's stuff. I mean, it's not exactly okay. Eye-popping.
Okay. Name the best support person on his staff that he's had in his entire career.
How do you judge the quarterback? Judging the quarterback position based on, you know, like if you have like wide receivers, you have Cam Newton, did have Steve Smith. He did have Greg Olsen. Mm-hmm. He did have Calvin Benjamin. And
he had a rookie receiver. You're going to come back. You're going to put a rookie receiver.
But he did very well. I'm just saying that he did very well. But the Seahawks, they're passing threats. Yes, he's got the running back.
Uh-huh.
But that now they did get tight end Jimmy Graham from the Saints through a trade.
Sure.
Which is big.
And in earnest, that'll be very interesting to see what that does to their running game. I agree.
Towards Russell Wilson's side. Yeah. What is he throwing to? A guy, Lockett.
Okay.
Doug Baldwin. So, I don't even know their tight end.
No, Luke Wilson, I didn't know either, but that's so because John Carlson.
You're looking at targets, and then with the Panthers, you're looking at low running game, but decent pass offense. So not everything is that, you know, is straightforward about who's the better player.
Oh, yeah. That's exactly the reason why Russell Wilson isn't the better choice, is because it's not straightforward.
So, because, There's a lot of consistency in Russell Wilson's game.
And that's a true statement.
Yeah. But Cam Newton is you know, it's there.
Because here's where I'll meet you in the middle on it for sure. I'm not looking it up because I don't feel like it. But if I were to guess, who would I think has a better third down percentage? Oh, it's Russell Wilson. Let's be clear for 30 seconds, right? The dude can make the pinpoint pass to get the long third down on the occasions where Marshawn Lynch hasn't done it for him. I'll give you credit all day for that, Weasel. Again, I don't think Russell Wilson is bad. I just think he's slightly overrated. There is a difference, right?
I'd say, well, when you look at something simple as a completion percentage, that's between his, sometimes it would be Lynch, but it's between the wide receivers and the tight end, 63%. And for 63.1% for 2013 and 14, and you got 64% in 2012, his rookie year.
Okay. Well, I'm not reading off a screen in front of me here, but here's what I'll say. Who has had the fewest passing attempts the past two NFL seasons?
I guess it's,
don't look it up. I already know. It's your boy. Okay? When you throw fewer passes, when you throw the ball less, it's easy for you to have a higher completion percentage, especially when the defense is keying on Marshawn Lynch. See, and that's what's I give you credit, though, Weasel, because you're not just throwing the numbers at me completely. Well, you did throw a few numbers at me, but yeah, they were good choices. A lot of this is the film, and that's what makes this tough, is Russell Wilson does make plays. And there's nothing on the stat sheet yet that says awesome plays made. There isn't such a category. It just doesn't exist, which will transition nicely into this next topic. How does one actually evaluate who the best cornerback is? Because, again, here we have it once more, Antonio Cromartie talking about how, oh, my goodness, Darrelle Revis is the best, or excuse me, Richard Sherman is not the best cornerback in the NFL. First of all, does anybody else think that's slightly biased, that this is Revis's wingman calling this out? And, well, he wasn't just his wingman one time. Currently, they're playing together, or at least on the same roster together.
Yeah, they're on the same roster again, yes.
So, I suspect a touch of bias. That doesn't make him wrong. I'm just suspecting there's a touch of bias. And the reason given is because of this, of the way that the Seahawks play. Richard Sherman plays a side, not a man or a receiver. Thoughts on that? Weasel, go ahead.
Well, I was looking up some stats with Richard Sherman. Boom. And the main thing about him is that he takes the right side of the field, and it does help when you have guys like Chancellor and
Cam Chancellor
and
Earl
other
Thomas,
corners, Earl Thomas,
Vernon Maxwell.
Yeah, you got some good players on the other side.
The Legion of Boom, not just a clever nickname. I got you.
While you would, because I think what people notice is that he's playing the right corner position, and what he has going for him is that you have a lot of right-handed quarterbacks in the NFL.
Oh.
Now, when you have, whenever you roll out to the right, what side would you pass on? You would pass to the right side.
I would have to throw it right.
Unless you're Weasel,
you always go across your body.
Hey, actually, well, this is playoff. These are two playoff examples. In 2009, it was Favre before the NFC Championship game. Could have ran 10 yards for first down. Had a 45-yard field goal that he could make, but he decides to throw it across his body, interception. Peyton Manning, 2-3 years ago, I believe, I think it was in one of the playoff games, he threw it across his body and it was intercepted.
You're talking about against the Ravens?
Believe so, yes.
Please don't bring that game
he
up.
He kind of
go crazy.
Threw it across his body, but
it wasn't as bad as Favre's, but I'll agree, it was not the best choice, absolutely.
But, you know, if you throw in some numbers out there later.
Sure.
But the thing about it is that whenever the ball is thrown towards Richard Sherman, the guy has, like, I think, the fewest times people pass against him. A lot of players, there's Aaron Rodgers. I think in the playoff game or wherever, he threw, I think, zero targets over to that side.
Correct.
And he's possibly the best quarterback in the NFL.
And let me add this caveat to it. He even refused to throw at him after Sherman hurt himself. Right?
Yeah.
Because he banged himself up. Was it
and
his
he was,
shoulder,
he
I
was,
think?
He was pretty much grabbing his, I think it was his right arm.
Yeah.
You know, trying to, I guess, keep it, you know, a little stable there. But
right.
He's still running out there. But he just, I think when he's thrown to, he has, like, I think it was like two times more interceptions, like guys like Revis or so. And I guess what he does for his team, it's pretty much shutting down a side of the field. And yes, he's not running after the number one wide receiver, because usually the wide receiver would then go to the left side, but he is essentially shutting down one side of the field. But you got to understand that with Revis and stuff and Cromartie and I would say Patrick Peterson, pretty much what they say is, hey, that guy's the best. You follow him around all game. And with Sherman, he doesn't get that. He's in like a kind of a zone type defense. He's got good help around him. But when it comes down to it, his interception like ratio and stuff like that, completion ratio against him is still, it's one of the top in the NFL.
Oh,
so I was thinking, yeah, he doesn't cover the number one, but the thing is he's just in a great scheme. He does, you know, shut down that side of the field. And when you have two-thirds of the field, you still have great players around there. So I think we can compare this kind of to to when we were talking about the quarterbacks. For
okay.
The quarterbacks, you're talking about a guy that runs the ball. You're talking about Marshawn Lynch. You're talking about, for the Seahawks, you're talking about his wide receivers and tight end. Who? And, yeah, great throw in the Super Bowl there, Russell Wilson. Awesome. And
that's
so
harsh.
And then you're talking about all these other players. And with, I guess, Cam Newton, his running backs, there was no consistency because of injuries and such.
Right.
But if you're talking about Richard Sherman being the best cornerback, you got to then look at the other the defense for him. You got to look at that stuff too. I see it as the very similar kind of thing. Like, who does let's see, Revis, was he surrounded by supreme offensive defensive talent like in the secondary?
Well, let me approach it this way. Revis, with the Patriots, represented the best second corner duo they had in a decade. We've made that discussion. And who was on the other side of Darrell Revis last year? Who remembers?
Brandon Browner.
Very good.
Who was from the Seahawks.
More importantly, who's wingman?
Yeah.
Richard Sherman. Right? So he's got a guy who already knows the pressure of being the quote-unquote other guy in the pairing. Moreover, Richard Sherman also has an excellent front seven to deal with. Now, granted, not to say that Brandon Meebane isn't a good D-tackle, but the D-tackle was the weakest spot there. But, I mean, you look around, what is it, Michael Bennett, Cliff Averill, Bobby Wagner, Malcolm Smith, just a lot of guys, and not even to mention the safety help like you did. Revis, Vince Wilfork, exactly.
And for that defense, you're talking, it's a little different with Sherman. He has, I think in the past, he has covered wide receivers such as you got Calvin Johnson. I think they've sometimes had him match up to the number one wide receiver. Not too many times, but if there's that, you know, premier guy, he has stood his ground.
Sure.
So, but it's just...
One of the more fun matchups to watch to that end was him versus Dez Bryant. I almost forgot. Dez Bryant. That was an impressive one to watch. Also a game, by the way, that the Seahawks lost. But it wasn't because of that pairing, I dare to say. But let me ask you, because you're touching on an interesting point, something I wanted to build on. Is it a better idea to put a corner where there's more traffic? Or is it a better idea to put a corner where the number one guy is? And to that end, I mean this. You mentioned that Richard Sherman is on the right side of the
field. Pretty much always.
Yeah. I mean,
that's his job duty.
Zone. Okay.
Yeah.
And then that most quarterbacks are also right-handed and will therefore be more prone to throw in that direction. Is this because he's scared of the talent or because the coaching staff is putting him where there's going to be a higher likelihood to get the ball thrown at him? Who's considered that? I don't know, Chris, is that insane? Yeah.
No, I mean, most teams' corners, the top corner goes to the bigger side of the field. Not even just the player, they go to the bigger side of the field because they cover more ground.
Two-thirds, I believe Weasel said.
Right, so with that, you know, Richard Sherman's always on that other side. I mean, you got to look at other corners. You can always look at him, like Asante Samuel when he was with the Patriots and even with the Eagles. He'd, you know, run across the field to the larger side of the field. I mean, Richard Sherman, he has, 24 interceptions in 4 years? You know, most interceptions, you know, by a young player in the first 4 years of his career.
And let me add this factor, too, because the other corners – we only really know who Patrick – I would argue we only really know who Patrick Peterson is because we needed to respond to Richard Sherman, right? We needed Richard Sherman competition. I say we as, quote, the media, right? We only know who Joe Hayden is because of the discussions at corner that came about by Richard Sherman. I think there's a perception factor here. Think back to the days of Deion Sanders. Sure, he didn't want to tackle anybody, which, by the way, I respect Sherman for because that dude will mix it up. He may not be the best tackler in the league, but he's not afraid of contact.
I think one thing is that you're talking about, you know, on the field. Who do you cover? Are you in zone or in all this? I think the thing with Richard Sherman, what people say why he's so good is his preparation. The guy, I've heard like in interviews and stuff where he says that, you know, right before you take a step or you take that first step, he knows what you're going to do.
He sees your tendency.
Yeah, the guy is, because, you know, people, if you don't keep up with, like, you know, following like the backstories of the NFL, you're going to see Richard Sherman as a loudmouthed, boastful, and he's got an ego. And it's like you see that kind of player in him.
Let's hold on. Virtually every skill player in the NFL has an ego.
Well, not necessarily to like millions of viewers, like watching a game
and
stuff.
He's not famous for it. Okay.
It's the thing with I'm the best corner in the league. Why you put a guy like Michael Crabtree on me?
Yeah.
That's what people see and say, oh, is he the best or not? But the thing about it is the guy's very intelligent. He got a communications degree from Stanford. He was about, like, I think it was a fifth round pick, I believe.
A fifth round pick, that's correct.
And, but the guy, like, you've seen it in, because he had, a lot of people gave him a lot of crap. And so what reporters want to do is they want to try to, like, get him into, like, you know, saying something stupid or, and stuff like that. But the guy is very articulate, and him in, like, news conferences and stuff, the guy is, you know, he's on spot.
I mean, look, this is a player I've actually interviewed. I think articulate is a good adjective to describe
him. But game preparation, he is like one, like he is up there, because I think with speed wise and stuff, I think if he goes like I looked it up in 3 years ago, 4 years ago, he had a 4.56 40-yard dash in the combine.
So as a rookie, he was more kind of on pace at with his 40 in the combine.
So. The thing is, he's not the fastest guy, mm-hmm. recovery-wise. If you're a guy like, I guess, Patrick Peterson, he's pretty quick.
I know he's lower than 4.6.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing where he doesn't have that much recovery time. But the thing is he's consistent with, you know, if the ball goes on my side of the field, I'll either stop it or intercept it. So.
Well, if you know where the guy's going to go.
You could jump routes and everything like that.
How much recovery time do you really need?
It's you just, you know, can't get him beat or anything like that, and preparation definitely does that. You hear that about quarterbacks all the time, how much time they put in the film room, but when you have a guy like Richard Sherman and Malcolm Butler, undrafted rookie for the Patriots.
Why is he relevant, Weasel?
Well, ask the Seahawks, and he's very relevant.
But because picking off Russell Wilson for the win.
You have a... For in terms of like Malcolm Butler, you have a guy that's an undrafted free agent, and the way he made that play, it was watching film. You notice the double stack; they're going to try to pick him, and what he did was he immediately, right when there was a snap, he jumped the route and stuff. That's what I think a huge thing that you don't hear about for other players in the field besides
the quarterbacks
usually. So.
Yeah, and yeah, maybe a safety or something, we'll mention that. But I'll add this much to it, like where I was going with Richard Sherman has that perception thing. Are people afraid of him? I'm not going to go that far.
They fear to go to his side. A quarterback's fear to go to the side of the field for him.
Well, I wouldn't even necessarily call it fear, or maybe you would call this fear, but my thing is, you know, if I throw it here and he does get it, I'm never going to hear the end of that crap.
Yeah.
All expletive deleted season, all I'm going to hear about is how Captain Dreadlock done picked me off. I'm assuming that the quarterback would call him Captain Dreadlock. I don't know why. He does have cool hair, though.
Yeah.
Anyways. But, yeah, no, I think it's a combination of all those things. I don't know. Chris, put a bow on it. Richard Sherman, best corner in the game or what?
It's kind of hard, I think, to put corners on there. Because of the scheme players you're with, I'd say he's up there top. I'm not sure. Just because of his supporting cast, I'd like to see him in a different offense and then, you know, or a different defense and see how good he is or if he's just a scheme.
I don't know that we'll ever see that with the way he just got paid by the Seahawks, but I digress. Yeah, you know, but anyway, so your eyes lit up. You were supposed to go on and take this as the segue to the other thing.
Gotcha. So, all right. So with Richard Sherman, where you're talking about with how he knows the tendency of receivers and everything. Well, he was a wide receiver in college before he was a corner.
Correct.
And he was actually a freshman All-American receiver at Stanford. He led the Stanford with receiving yards his freshman year. So with the tendencies, that's it. So with this. We have a matchup of Richard Sherman as a receiver versus Darrell Revis at corner. Who would win that matchup?
Well, I'll say this about that. Part of what makes that compelling is that a Richard Sherman is he's not as big as a Calvin Johnson, but he's as tall as an Andre Johnson. And I don't think he's quite that big either. But you know what? I would compare him to Brandon Marshall. Maybe a little smaller than Brandon Marshall even, but he's a big enough body to be a standout as a receiver. Now, Revis matches well against bigger guys. I mentioned Brandon Marshall when Brandon Marshall was a Dolphin and they were playing each other when it was Jets Dolphins, never really seemed to go too well for Marshall. I don't know, but...
And it never went well for Randy Moss when he was with the Patriots when Revis got rid of him.
Correct. Very good.
So you can't do it one-on-one with just one times, like best out of 10. Who would have the best out of the 10?
I think if we're going...
Or say,
ten, if it's 10
say,
goes...
Say 9 goes because they can have an odd number.
I don't think they'd push. But no, I'm gonna say out of 10, I think Revis would win 7. Because you're going to his strength. Weasel.
Yeah, I'd say if you flip the players and stuff, you could do that to have one go against the other. But in terms of you're saying Revis as the
corner.
The corner and Sherman as the receiver. Wide receiver.
Right. Because Sherman used to be a receiver.
I would say, you would think because right. Revis is the man guy. He's man to man, number one wide receiver all the time. But I'd say with his skill, because of his skill at wide receiver, and they just, you know, the guy's always up there, I give the slight edge to Sherman.
Really? So out of 10 times, how many does Sherman win?
I'd say he'd win about either 5 or 6.
Out of 9, how many does he win?
Out of 9? I say 5, then.
Okay, there you go. That'll do it. All right, well, see the beauty of it? Chris has a list. It's like, because of matchups, he just kind of went crazy. Just what's next on the list? Yeah. I'm curious.
All right, then Richard Sherman at receiver versus Patrick Peterson, since we're talking about corners.
I think this would be at least 4 to 6 out of 10, because he'll get that extra one just on the strength of the fact that Peterson and he have a quote-unquote Twitter beef. So that's what I'm going to say Peterson wins overall again because corner is what they devoted themselves to. But, yeah, I still got Peterson because he actually plays corner. I don't know. Weasel.
Something that Patrick Peterson, I think, has over Sherman, just a little bit, speed.
Okay.
And back in the day, I guess, when he was with LSU, 4.34. Yeah.
That's a big deal.
And I'd say that, you know, maybe 6 out of 10 type thing for Patrick Peterson because, I think instincts and all that goes so far, but it's just, you know, Odell Beckham, when he went up against him, has crisp routes and he's very, very fast. So I give Patrick Peterson the edge here just based upon, you know, physical 10. Attributes.
How many out of
6.
10?
6.
6, okay.
Yeah.
So, well, let me... See, here's the thing, and be careful with that speed thing, Weasel, because not that this example's to scale, but who's faster, you or me?
You. I'd say me, yeah.
Yeah, obviously. I'm 300 pounds, 6'5", and at least 2 years, at least 3 years older than you.
Right.
But if I run a slant, you're not getting around my 300-pound fat ass. So, again, not to scale here, because... Are you even 200, please? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm low 200s.
Okay. So, granted, not that Patrick Peterson's giving up 100 pounds-ish, but, you know, the size factor here matters, too, and that's why I think Sherman gets 4 is on the strength of the size.
And that just to say about Richard Sherman, simply put, a lot of times wide receivers, if they can't catch, what do? They put them on defense. You got a guy like Richard Sherman. You see why he's at, his interception numbers are up there. Like, one of the best in the league, I think you said 4 years. What, 25?
24 interceptions. 24
interceptions.
Because he was trained to catch.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So that's a huge thing. So
excellent point. We're gonna go ahead and wrap up on that because that's our hour, folks. Of course, you can find me on Twitter at TheSOTG. Go ahead and go to NGSC Sports YouTube page and check out the second episode of the Sports Symposium. Or check out the first one, too, if you haven't checked that out. The Sports Symposium here is me trying to get my thoughts out there. And, you know, hit me up at TheSOTG on Twitter. Let me know how those go. Of course, the Real Men of Awesome videos, it's funny. Even those that have a little age on them still hold up today. I find that very interesting. Anyways, mm-hmm. Of course, you find Weasel on Twitter at WeaselTheSOTG. Find Chris on Twitter at Hydraulic Upright, UPRITE, on Twitter. And, yeah, what can I say? Good times, not bad for an off-season show, most certainly. But until next time, class dismissed.